Welcome to the edition of Spirit, March 2023. Dear readers, after a grueling statistics lesson in probability, I wondered aloud how realistic it would be to apply concepts of probability to real life. According to my teacher, myths such as the law of averages are more popular than the probability laws we study. This myth leads people to think that a series of certain events leave them luckier or more likely to win or to do something, and it's something we see referenced often. For example, when we play a board game, Morris might roll unlucky numbers many times in a row. When his next turn comes, he might say, excitedly, "I will definitely roll a 2 this time. It's been too long since I rolled a 2. The thing is, Morris, you still have an equal chance of rolling any number if the dice is fair, whether you roll 6 40 times in a row or not even once in 40 tries. You still have the same chance of rolling a 6 the next time, 1 by 6th. Practical requirements for statistical confidence falls apart when they are applied to the real world. People are a lot more complex than a model system indicates. The law of averages might be a myth, but I still believe in some March luck. There's certainly no harm in expecting the best and working for it. Love, Editor Janu. Chance favors the prepared mind. Dr. Louis Pasteur. Quote of the month, March 2023. Jane and the Fire by Janu. Jane is back. In 1958, young Jane has just moved to the city of Chicago, Illinois, with her parents and cousins. When Jane stumbles across a hidden panel in the wall of the abandoned house, she becomes certain that it isn't as empty as it seems. After discovering the false newspaper hidden blueprints, Jane begins to wonder what are the three thugs doing with the tunnel. The fading evening light spilled into the hall as the person on the porch entered the house. Jane froze and nearly passed out with relief as she heard Dawn's piercing whisper, "I think the house is empty." Heart still thudding, she turned back to the front wall. "Well, then you think wrong. What are you doing here?" Paige and Dawn stood gaping in the front wall. "What are you doing here?" As they crossed the street to the park playground, Jane described the blueprint in the hidden panel cupboard. The tunnel blueprint was what they were hiding that day at the Hungry Eagle. "Be more careful next time," Dawn said sagely. "We wanted to see what was happening because the dining room light lit up half the road outside." Jane shook her head, grinning. "Maybe you should consider moderating the volume of your whisper." Paige cut off the bickering. "What could they want with a tunnel?" Jane shivered. The evening chill was settling in. "I don't know, but I don't think it can be anything good." Bill and Will sat building castles in the park sandbox. As Jane watched Will-shaped turrets attached to the outer wall of the castle, she noticed Bill cackling to himself, sitting a little away from Will's castle. "Billy," she began, but it was too late. He popped his spade out of the middle of Will's castle. "Hey," Will cried furious. "What was that for?" He jumped on Billy, and Dawn languidly separated the two laughing fighters. They started on their ways homeward. "We'll have to keep a closer eye on your cousins with those unsavory characters about Jane," Dawn said. Where do you even come from? Called Willie over Dawn's shoulder, still arguing with Billy about the sandcastle debacle. "Below," said Jane thoughtfully. She said goodbye to Paige and Dawn as they reached the steps of the Joyce's apartment, holding Billy and Will firmly by each hand. The next morning was Saturday. Jane woke bright and early, setting off from home at Mrs. Joyce's bidding with Billy and Willie and $5. Saturday was cleaning day and no one had breakfast at home. They made their way to the Hungry Eagle, where Dawn and Paige were already busy setting tables with napkins, cutlery and catsup. With Jane's help, the rest of the tables were quickly set, and soon the 5 children were sitting down to syrupy French toast, milk and orange slices. Paige swiped an orange slice playfully from Willie's plate, and Dawn, righteously amused, swiped a few more, causing Willie to fly into a rage and upset a pitcher of syrup into Jane's lap. Jane stormed away to the washroom to try to squeeze away as much of the syrup away as possible. The Hungry Eagle was filling up with eager breakfasters. The air was thick with conversation and the sizzle of the food on the frying pan. The struggle to step around all the people to find her friends and siblings again. When she finds their booth again, it's empty. The half-emptied plates are still there, but the children have disappeared. Jane looks around. In the crowd, in the shop. It's hard to see all. Where are they? We'll find out in the next issue of Spirit. What makes classical music beautiful? The origins of music are tied to divinity. Music has been sacred to many cultures since its dawn, from hymns, prayers and chants, during ordinary times to celebrations of weddings, birth, and all the way to the tomb. In ancient Egypt, music played an integral role in worship. Temples and palaces in pharaonic Egypt, both of which were thought to house the divine, were often filled with music. The biblical King David won hearts with his remarkable music, playing the harp so beautifully that he was accepted into the court of King Saul. To Hindus, the sacred note Om is said to relate to the universe itself. Ancient Hindu epics like the Ramayana and Mahabharata reference music. Indian classical music, the two forms of which are Carnatic music and Hindustani music, developed primarily as devotional music out of sacred texts. In India and in Europe, wealthy businessmen and Maharajas who had the resources and time to enjoy music became famous patrons of the arts. Cities like India's Varanasi and Italy's Bologna became famous for their music. I think classical music is beautiful because it transcends language and borders. It feels like a purer form of music, just instruments and voice, unenhanced by modern technologies, but startlingly beautiful and sweet in love. How clear it is. Classical music can be moving, energetic, both or neither. Classical music is beautiful because it is unitive. I was listening to a cello concert on YouTube and realized I wasn't the only one moved by its beauty. Comments on the video were in English, Spanish, Russian, French, Italian, and Japanese. Fruit of the month, tangerine dreams. Tangerines, the perfect tangy little fruit snack. But what sets this delightful and picturesque little orange apart from the wide and extensive orange family? Tangerines are derived from the mandarin family and are a small and thin-skinned variant of the Rutaceae mandarin family. Tangerine trees are quite beautiful, with glossy green leaves and perfumed white flowers. Besides their delectableness, here are a few reasons you should consider snacking on these little mandarins. Tangerines are very refreshing, being nutrient and water rich. They are about 85% water and contain vitamin C, vitamin B, and potassium. The beta-cryptoxanthin antioxidant, which gives tangerines their vivid orange color, is converted to vitamin A in the body. The vitamin C in tangerines help boost the immune system, thus tangerines can reduce duration and severity of the common cold. Also, tangerines can help reduce the severity of allergic reactions. Healthy antioxidants that tangerines contain can help protect the brain against conditions like schizophrenia and Parkinson's disease. Yet another benefit of vitamin C is its ability to reduce the risk of some cancers. Eating tangerines regularly may help support wound healing after surgery. Vitamin C in tangerines help our bodies make collagen, which is what keeps skin feeling and looking youthful. Don't waste overripe tangerines. Put them in a marmalade. Happy snacking! Spirit athletes or athletics. John Doerenbos. Life is magic. John Doerenbos is a motivational speaker who mesmerizes audiences with magic and inspires them by sharing his personal story of overcoming tragedy. Doerenbos spent 14 years in the National Football League as a long snapper, playing for the Buffalo Bills, Tennessee Titans, and Philadelphia Eagles as a two-time Pro Bowler. He's also a professional magician, performed his magic act on multiple seasons of the America's Got Talent show. His journey from tragedy to self-discovery is truly incredible. Born in humble Texas, Doerenbos grew up in Woodinville, WA, Washington. When he was 12 years old, he went through an unimaginable tragedy. His father murdered his mother. With his father convicted and sentenced to prison, Dorenbos was sent to a foster home. A year later, he was discovering magic and studying magic tricks that brought him out of his shell. It gave him purpose, focus, and connection with other people. In high school, Dorenbos was a letterman in 4 different sports: football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. He also made the dean's list and was an honor roll student. During his freshman year at Golden West College, he sent video of his football playing to the coaches at the University of Texas at El Paso, UTEP, at the recommendation of his best friend who was studying there. He went on to earn a degree at the UTEP in business and played for the UTEP Miners football team as a long snapper. After college, Dorenbos was signed as a long snapper by the Buffalo Bills following the 2003 NFL draft. At 38 years old, at the height of his career, he was traded to the New Orleans Saints. But instead of heading into the field to play for his new team, he was forced to head into the emergency surgery. A routine physical exam revealed that he had a heart murmur. Dorenbos was diagnosed with an aortic aneurysm, which required immediate heart surgery. The road to recovery was a long and painful one. But John did not allow the career-ending diagnosis to defeat him. When one day you're a professional athlete heading into your 15th season in the NFL, and the next you're told that you need an open heart surgery, well, you can look skyward and scream, "Why me?" Or you can be thankful that your undiagnosed heart condition was discovered in time. You can feel thankful and grateful and pledge to live each moment fully aware of how precious it is. I think my life story summarizes it all. Find motivation in defeat and tell yourself a narrative that inspires yourself to keep on, said John. Fine arts. A beautiful picture of the Taj Mahal, Robbinsville Temple, and a window art with a nice watch hang. If you're an artist, poet, photographer, or a writer, send us your artwork, composition, photography, etc. to see it featured in a future edition of The Spirit. Email editor Janu at thehappyherald.org with inquiries. The Hotel. A short story. The city was dark and rainy, and Johanna's mood was just as bleak. It was bitterly cold for March. After what felt like hours, the cab finally began to slow down. Johanna peered out of the window, frowning. The hotel rose tall and forbidding, disappearing into the Tygian cloud sky. She heaved a suitcase up the waterlogged stairs, exhausted, dull, ready to collapse into a warm bed for a night. She checked the slip of the paper her aunt had offered her earlier that day. "It's been 40 years since I visited, dear, but from what I remember, it was a lovely hotel." Her aunt's crabbed writing was hard to read in the dim light, but she could just make out the words, "The Tower." Though the lobby was warmly lit, the furniture was rather shabby. Painted china vases sat primly on teakwood coffee tables, but the paint had cracked and peeled, and the floral arrangements within were dry or wilted. Johanna was too peeved and uncomfortable to question the quality of the housekeeping. There was no concierge behind the front desk, but there was a bell and a sign requesting visitors to ring it for service. She pressed the bell and waited a long, silent minute. She rang it again, and a concierge emerged, yawning, from the office behind the desk. "Sorry for the delay, miss," he said, swiping at his bleary eyes. "There's a room available on the 19th floor, if you would." "Yes," interrupted Johanna. "Anything to get a nice warm room and a restful sleep," she thought. The concierge handed her a heavy metal key. "Enjoy the stay, miss. We don't get hardly any new visitors these days since the management changed. It's good to see a new face once in a while." Rambling to himself, he disappeared to the back office. She dismissed the situation from her mind and hurried to the elevators, where she met a shabby bellhop. His red velvet uniform had clearly seen many a busy day, and matching velvety cylindrical hat had a dent at the back. When they reached the 19th floor, he waved away her proffered tip. "No need, miss," he said. "We hope you'll stay a while. Nice to see someone new around here." What an odd hotel, thought Johanna. She pulled the heavy metal key out of her pocket to open the door. The room was nice and warm, and after washing up, Johanna went straight to bed. The next morning, Johanna woke bright and early to find the continental breakfast. After stepping out of the room, she found herself in a long hallway of identical doors. She didn't remember the elevator being too far from the room. But after walking several minutes, she began to wonder if she had started in the wrong direction. She started back along the direction of her own apartment. But to her surprise, the room numbers seemed to have changed. Without passing her own, which was 1937, she was walking past 1976, 77, 78. She frowned and walked faster. It had to be this way. She just left the room. The hallway turned to a corner and continued along. She paused, winded. Somehow she had reached 1929 again without reaching her own. A guest opened a room a few doors away and she ran forward to meet them. It was the bellhop's apartment and the fellow blinked confusedly at her. "Would you help me find the elevator?" Johanna said. "Or my own room? I'm afraid I've been walking in. She froze. Behind the bellhop, a window was visible. The bright morning sunlight has been replaced by the darkness of the night. "But that's impossible. I only started from my room a few minutes ago." The bellhop winced. "It happens, miss. Time gets confused around here." Johanna froze. She turned quickly to run and glory be. Found herself facing her own room and the elevator. Seizing her suitcase, she ran out of the elevator and the tower's terrible twilight zone. What is the fourth dimension? You might have watched 4D movies or put on 3D glasses, created 2D drawings, or found a 1D mark on your newly painted wall. So what is it that really qualifies each of the four dimensions? Some begin with the zeroth dimension, but we will begin by wrapping our minds around the first dimension. It consists of points. Points in space, close together in a row, can make lines. Everything in the first dimension is a point or a line. Lines only vary by their length and orientation. The second dimension exists in another direction, perpendicular to the first. A line in the first dimension and a line on the other identical dimension, perpendicular to the first, might intersect. Thus, we have formed a corner of a square in the second dimension. For a square in the second dimension to be represented as a cube, we must introduce the third dimension. The XY plane of the second dimension becomes the XYZ plane of the third dimension. Reach an arm out in front of you and turn your palm upwards towards the sky. This is the dimension 1. Turn your palm so that it's parallel to the walls. This is dimension 2. Now turn your palm so that it's slanted and diagonally facing the ground. This is one way to visualize the three planes when beginning to study multivariable calculus. Scientists don't even know if there is a fourth dimension. Einstein thought that one would include space and time. The fourth dimension might be space curled up, unbelievably small around us. Some picture it as another series of dimensions around the third. So our question is unanswerable right now, but that's part of what makes physics so beautiful. Wellness Central. Dear Spirit, what should I eat for dinner tonight? It's a question for the ages. 4:30 rolls around and the minds of dinner makers around the world begin faintly to consider what might be a good option for a meal. The average American eats dinner from 6 to 7 p.m. each evening, though dinner times vary mostly in America, going from 4:30 p.m. to as late as 11. It's hard to judge whether a given meal is healthy or unhealthy because there is no rigid qualifiers to determine what makes a healthy meal. Based on different meals eaten, a diet can be determined as healthy or unhealthy. Typically, healthy meals are highly nutritious and include carbohydrates, proteins, fats, and plenty of vitamins and minerals, and of course, water. According to the CDC, a healthy eating plan is centered around fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and low-fat dairy products. Also, meals should ideally include a variety of different proteins. Other products to avoid: added sugar, sodium, different types of fat, and cholesterol. Healthy portions differ from person to person, but meals should remain within each person's daily caloric needs. Cooking Kali, innovative recipes and also your favorite classics. What to do with overripe bananas besides just going bananas? Bananas are a temperamental kind of fruit. If the ripeness is just right, eating a banana can be a bliss. Underripe? Nope, that's terrible. Overripe? Even worse. And God forbid you step on a peel. With a temperamental fruit, you just need to take what you can get. When what you can get is just an overripe banana, you're going to have to deal with it. Sidestep the issue and the banana peel you might have hurled on the ground in frustration. By using the banana in recipes that require you to mush bananas up, instead of being a banana behind, you're one step ahead. Banana walnut muffins. Mash the banana up with a fork and include it in a stirred muffin dough before baking until muffins are golden brown. Chocolate banana bread. Include sweet cocoa powder and chocolate chips to introduce new flavors to the classic banana bread. Mushy bananas make this bread extra moist and delicious. Chocolate chip banana pancakes. Mix mushy bananas into the pancake mix and add chocolate chips. Serve with maple syrup or with chocolate syrup and whipped cream. Overripe bananas are not a lost cause. Any other recipe ideas? Share with editor Janu at gmail.com. Jot Thoughts Reviews, Critique on Literature and More. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. It's yet another version of the classic folk tale. The old carpenter makes a wooden puppet, enchanted by a blue fairy to come to life and to grow a longer nose upon telling any lies. What sets Guillermo del Toro's version of the very same story apart is the charm, wit, humor and emotion he brings to astonishing stop-motion animation. The amount of detail and expression that can be seen on each character's face. The casting is absolutely perfect. Ewan McGregor as Sebastian J. Cricket, an aspiring author. David Bradley as a cranky Master Geppetto. And Gregory Mann as a chirpy, cheerful, ingenue Pinocchio. Tell a beautifully moving tale. This story truly has something to offer. It's not just the story of Pinocchio. It's the characters of the childhood classic together who have a new story to tell. Sebastian J. Cricket narrates the whole piece. He begins by introducing it, not as a fairy tale, nor as an adventure about a family and a terrible way, but just as a story, one about imperfect fathers and imperfect sons. That's what makes the story moving. Real families are imperfect. Real families must work hard to be happy. Real families endure loss and miscommunication. Real families are sometimes put in difficult situations. When fathers might think desperately about a way out of the situation and sons might actually rashly try to save them both. It's heartwarming to see each of the characters find family and ultimately happiness. The story is enchanting because there is reality in it, which is what touches the viewer. The characters are clever imaginations of the original story. Lampwick has become Candlewick. The pretty blue fairy becomes a kind of slightly scary wood sprite combination of many different animals. And the wicked distracting fox becomes a brutal horrendous showman named Count Walpy. Walpine, of course, being an adjective for fox-like. Walpy's sidekick, who eventually sees the light in a mangy-rangy monkey named Spazzatura, played astonishingly by Cate Blanchett. It's set in fascist Italy, and the town's Podesta struggle for the homeland blinds him to the struggles of his son's Candlewick. The time period is brilliantly recreated. The beauty of Italy and the majesty of the landscape does not blind the viewer to the pervasive horrors of Mussolini's regime. Boys like Candlewick are forced to go to war, and courage develops a new meaning. The church plays an important role, representing faith and blind devotion. Another heart-wrenching scene occurs when the townspeople scream and flee from Pinocchio, who wonders why they hate him when they love Jesus, who in the church is also carved of wood. That's not to say you won't laugh. Sebastian J. Cricket provides constant comic relief. Pinocchio is pretty kooky at times, and a song upon meeting Geppetto is a riot. The music is lilting and beautiful. Geppetto sings a song, "My son, my son," that brings tears to one's eyes. It might be yet another Pinocchio, but it's a brand new one all the same. Definitely give it a watch. Thanks for listening to the Spirit Edition of March 2023. Have a wonderful day.